on 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty. Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. You are very welcome to Game On. It is Wednesday the 9th of March. A massive thank you to Laura Fox for kicking off the afternoon in delightful fashion. Lots to get through this evening. We'll be previewing the rugby this weekend with Bernard Jackman. We'll have LGFA chat and Camogie chat with Aoife Murray and Nadine Doherty. But only one place to start. Stephen Kenny finally puts pen to paper on a new deal with the Irish team.
It is amazing. It's a privilege, of course, to manage Ireland. You know, I think it's been a great journey.
Yes, it is great news. Breaking news that we just got just before we came on air. So let's get right into it. You're listening to Game On at 2FM. It's Wednesday the 9th of March and I'm Shane Dawson.
Game On 2FM.
So, only one place to start, as I keep repeating myself. Republic of Ireland manager Stephen Kenny has signed a new contract to extend his tenure with the team until after Euro 2024. The former Dundalk manager's initial deal was due to expire this summer, but he has extended it. So, on this breaking news, I'm delighted to say Tony O'Donoghue and David Snaid join us now. Tony, if I come to you first, you're live down in the Aviva Stadium at the moment. Great news. I suppose we expected it, but possibly not this evening.
Well, I think we were expecting it. There's no surprise that he's been given a contract extension, really. And I guess the timing was only the issue. He's got the squad announcement coming up next week for the game against Belgium, the centenary game. And if the contract hadn't been agreed and signed by then, well, it would have just overshadowed the squad announcement, and it would have, I suppose, led to feelings perhaps that there was an issue in terms of finalising the contract. But instead now, after some negotiation, the contract has been finalised. Obviously, Roy Barrett, the independent chair of the FAI, Jonathan Hill, the CEO, have been happy to sign off on it, and they say the board of the FAI are happy as well. So he goes to the end of the Nations League, obviously, and indeed now to the end of the European Championships, whether that's to the end of our qualifying or hopefully that we make it all the way to the European Championships. So it gives him a lot more security. Also for his staff, and that's important too, although a staff member to replace Anthony Barry has yet to be announced. I guess it would have been neater if we had known who the replacement for Anthony Barry is going to be as well, because let's not forget, unfortunate circumstances as they might have been, Stephen Kenny has lost a number of key backroom staff in his tenure. He's lost Damien Duff, obviously, Alan Kelly. It's important to remember that, you know, Anthony Barry came along and was a hugely important part in the resurgence of fortunes in the Republic of Ireland side, you'd have to say, because, you know, since that heroic defeat, I suppose, and obviously moral victory away in the Algarve against Portugal, the games then against Serbia, Azerbaijan, Qatar, Portugal again, and Luxembourg, where, you know, the fortunes which had been poor, let's be honest, managers are going to be results ultimately, going to be judged rather by results ultimately, and the results had been poor for Stephen up till then, even though there were some green shoots, but then things started to click into place, and a lot of credit for that did go to not just Stephen, but the backroom staff as well. They have more time to get together. They went to Spain on a training camp. They were able to get the methodology right and able to get the teamwork right. And in the end, we saw some wonderful free-flowing football from Ireland. So the campaign ended on a high. I think what's important as well is the connection between the public and this team now. I think Stephen obviously has, I guess, the goodwill of the League of Ireland people. But as well as that, I think the wider audience has accepted what he's trying to do. He had a huge job in his hands. The Irish team was too old and too sterile. And he's injected youth and confidence, a bit of flair. And you can tell, I think, by the amount of season tickets sold, which is a record number for the FAI, that the public have bought into this team. So it was only a matter of time before Stephen's contract was done. But I'd like to know when this very important appointment of an assistant coach, obviously, you know, Stephen Rice is there and Keith Andrews and Damien Doyle. But who's going to replace Anthony Barry? That'll be a key member of his staff going forward.
Yeah, certainly we'll be interested to see when a decision on that is made. As Tony mentioned there, David, assistant manager Keith Andrews and Kenny's coaching team of Dean Kiely, Stephen Rice and Damien Doyle have all extended their deals as well. And we talk about kind of for so long, will he, won't he, when will he? But it finally puts to bed all of the speculation, I suppose. So that must be extremely positive for the squad going forward. I mean, he's handed, 16 players a competitive debut. And as Tony mentioned there, we do have a Nations League. We have a couple of friendlies coming up. So this is one distraction less for the players and indeed for the management.
Absolutely. And I think one of the points Tony made there, and it's actually important to touch on, he mentioned the training camp last summer, I think, which I did a piece at the end of the year for the 42, kind of spoke to several people in and around the Ireland camp, and that was that everyone kept on coming back to how important that was in terms of for Stephen Kenny and getting the message across. And actually, interestingly, Anthony Barry wasn't there for a fair chunk of it. He was actually one of the nights out the team went out to watch Chelsea win the Champions League. Chelsea won the Champions League, obviously, during that camp. And speaking to players and staff around the place, it was kind of a turning point for Stephen Kenny and the message that he was beginning to get across to players and a lot of the belief that was grown in this. And that really did come to the forefront as the campaign ended with the improved results and obviously finishing with that kind of that really comprehensive victory over Luxembourg, which I think was needed considering one of the nadirs of Stephen Kenny's campaign so far in charge was that obviously defeat to Luxembourg at the start of the campaign, which basically ended any hopes of almost getting to the World Cup, you know. And one of the really important things over the last while, because these negotiations, like Stephen Kenny first met Jonathan Hill, the FAI CEO, properly for a sit down, probably I think it was on the first week in December in Sheffield, and that's when talks began to ramp up. And that's obviously when the FAI board basically told Jonathan Hill, and as it was put to me by one senior member of the FAI board, you go and sort this out, and when this is done, come back to us. And one of the aspects about this was Stephen Kenny wanting to make sure that this wasn't a case of the FAI at the end of the Nations League campaign having some maybe remit to possibly have a payoff written into a contract. There wanted to be true clarity on this and a true actual basis to work towards the next campaign as well for the Euros. And it kind of plays to, not so much, I suppose, a little bit to the strength of the hand that Stephen Kenny and his representatives were able to go to with the FAI on this. But as you see, the kind of the level of optimism that did come towards the end of that campaign, and you see the fact that in recent weeks the FAI released some statements about record season ticket sales. I think they've announced only there a few hours ago as well on Twitter that it's up past, say, 18,000, which is a record, obviously, for the FAI, or for the Republic of Ireland. And when you consider what's actually ahead of us for this year, obviously there's a Nations League campaign, there's a couple of friendlies coming up next month, Belgium, that centenary game, when Anthony Barry will actually be returning in his role as a coach with Belgium. Like, when you consider that it's not a case of all these massive, huge, huge, brilliant games that are going to be coming up this year in terms of qualifiers. Like, remember when it came back to when Portugal came to Dublin and it was put down, the reason why the ground was sold out, other than the fact that we were coming through COVID and all the rest of it, was fans just wanted to see Ronaldo. Obviously that played a part, but it plays into what Tony was saying there about Stephen Kenny getting that sense of revitalising the team and what he has to do next, and which is crucial now, because it isn't going to be kind of doubts over, well, is he the man for the job after every international window, which seemed to be the case, because the FAI now have made it clear that he is their man now for the next couple of years. What Stephen Kenny has to do is build on the momentum that was building towards the end of the last campaign, and really the squad of players that he was able to overhaul. We're not going to be seeing as many changes in personnel, or at least we shouldn't, and it should be a case of him being able to work with those players, and when that final staff member does come in, then obviously the final, that will be part of the final piece of the jigsaw. But really, what needs to be seen is that continued development. And also, it can't be ignored, Stephen Kenny did set out that he wants to win his Nation League campaign. So results are going to have to come to him now as well as all his optimism, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tony, I know you're under a bit of time pressure, so I'll let you go after this question. But just, you mentioned Roy Barrett there, and you touched on, you know, the current FAI chairman, and he mentioned in the press release that the governing body believe in Kenny amid a changing landscape in Irish football. And as mentioned, the record season tickets, that the Ireland fans have already shown their commitment to this Ireland team with record season ticket sales, and I'm sure they will be delighted by this news, as are all the FAI board. As much as we talk about Stephen Kenny just invigorating Irish football and bringing the fans back, getting getting bums on seats again and really kind of instilling that bit of excitement that perhaps was missing in the past while. And David touched on there that the first meeting with Jonathan Hill was, what, the first week in December. So I suppose my question is, why has this dragged out so long? Was it just trying to get the particulars sorted in the contract and the small details? And is there a feeling from your dealings in FAI circles that he does have the support of everyone and he does have the belief that Stephen Kenny is the right man across the board?
Well, there were doubts. There's no question about that. There were doubts among certain factions or members of the board. But then that's not surprising because the results were very, very poor. And at the beginning of the campaign, I suppose Stephen was dogged as well by unfortunate circumstances. I mean, you know, the COVID situation, I think, affected Ireland possibly more than it affected many other international teams. We had the playoff against Slovakia, of course, and that was so close and yet so far. And it was almost like, you know, you prefer a lucky general than a good general at times, and we had no luck. But that luck has turned. But there were questions asked at boardroom level. There's no doubt about that. And there were some collywobbles. There were some fears that we may not have had the right man for the job. That was expressed in some media circles as well. But I think in general, you know, time has proven that Stephen had the belief of his players and his staff. The situation, things that happened, the likes of the Wembley situation, and are we calling it Wembley Gate still? You know, where a motivational video was questioned and there was an investigation launched by the FAI into that motivational video. That led, directly or indirectly, into the loss of Damien Duff from the international ticket. Rory Higgins was lost as well. Now he's a very talented young manager, very good, important member of Stephen Kenny's staff at the time. And you can't blame him for furthering his career and going on to, you know, managing Derry City and hopefully having his own managerial career. In the same way with Anthony Barry, given this opportunity to be with the number one team in the world, Belgium. But eventually we want to get players and people who are staying with Stephen Kenny and staying with Ireland and believing in that future and believing in not just the campaign till the end of 2024. This rebuild of Irish football is going to take a generation. It's going to take a long time. So he's got the end of the Nations League and the next campaign. But I'd be thinking about the one after that. And remember, if Ireland, as one of the co-hosts, could actually qualify automatically if it becomes an extended 32-team Euros for Euro 2028, with many of the games to be held here at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin, that there's no reason why Stephen Kenny couldn't be the manager of Ireland for that as well.
Absolutely. It will be interesting to see how this pans out, not only over the next few months and the initial couple of campaigns, but indeed the years to come. Tony O'Donoghue, RT Soccer Correspondent, thanks very much for taking the call. David, you're going to stay in the line here. We do have a bit of Champions League to look forward to, so I suppose let's just dive right in. Obviously, that was breaking news, and Stephen Kenny signing a contract is great news for Irish football, and hopefully the upcoming campaigns go well. But turning our attention to the Champions League, David, I suppose we'll touch on last night first. The art of football is to lose the right games, according to manager Jurgen Klopp. Liverpool made hard work of it, but they're through to the next round. What did you make of their performance? Because it was the first home defeat in a year and an absolute cracker of a goal, but they did manage to get through in the end.
And listen, that's all that matters, isn't it, at this stage? Knockout football, they got through. Like, they did the job over in the first leg. They were able to have that bit of a cushion. They kind of, you could tell maybe there wasn't that same edge that they probably would have needed if there was a proper, you know, if they needed to go and get maybe a draw or a win to actually get through. But they did have their chances. Like, there was opportunities there in Salah at the post. It just, I think it was one of those games where maybe, you know, like, it just shows you the fine margins where obviously, like, even if they're off by a couple of percent, because they do have to be full throttle and because they are that team who just can get teams by the throat, really. If they're maybe not at that exact level, that maybe even that is small percentages that can show a little bit. But yeah, like, listen, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose in the second leg of a tie. You're pretty much already through in, and get that little wobble out of the way. But again, if you're a Jurgen Klopp and if you're a Liverpool fan, more so obviously, like, Jurgen Klopp, not that he's going to need to remind his players, but it just kind of shows you as well that even as you get through in this Champions League, those little percentages are going to matter as well. So like, I'd be very surprised in the next toy if they're in that a similar position. If they do kind of take the foot off the gas, I think he'd be reminding them, because listen, it could be still an historic season for them with so much to play for. You know, and like, quadruple is technically still on for them. Don't get me wrong, they're still obviously a bit off the pace in the Premier League, and the Champions League obviously is very competitive, and the FA Cup still to go. But I think it's shaping up to be an exciting end to the season for Liverpool, when only a few weeks ago, or even maybe a month or two ago, it looked as if it could be a bit of a flat end to the season, whereas now it could be a pretty historic one for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And last night I was saying that perhaps Bayern Munich and Salzburg might be a better viewing spectacle from the neutral viewer, but you would have missed Lautaro Martinez's goal. Liverpool did squander a few chances, but I think it was, 109 goals in their previous 43 games beforehand. So I doubt Jurgen Klopp will be losing too much sleep. Yeah, exactly. It's United Church's League, Sanders, that is, David. but yeah, listen, as I said, Munich 7-1 winners over Salzburg. Robert Lewandowski scored a hat-trick inside the opening 23 minutes. The earliest, not the quickest hat-trick, but the earliest hat-trick. The quickest hat-trick going to Bafétémbi Gómez following his 3 goals in 8 minutes for Lyon in a 7-1 win over Dinamo Zagreb back in 2011. But, I mean, for Lewandowski there, he's now reached 85 Champions League goals in 3 fewer matches than Lionel Messi and 17 before Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, does this man get the credit he deserves?
Well, I don't think he hasn't got the Ballon d'Or, has he not? I remember, the season when Bayern won it as well, and that probably would have been the year he definitely would have got it. He missed out the last one to Messi. So maybe that's the one thing that he's probably looking for in terms of as a crown and glory, because he's won everything else. He's an absolute, like, as a striker, he's 33 years of age, and you wouldn't think, just the way he still moves, his intelligence and everything about him, he's just an absolute, like, genius when he's in that box. But I think, like, yeah, like, of course he gets the recognition everyone deserves. Everyone would recognise him as one of the main, like, one of the top strikers in world football, I suppose. And maybe it is, maybe over the last number of years, because of the battle between, say, Messi and Ronaldo for the Ballon d'Or, it does kind of feel as if that takes on an even greater significance. So I could be totally wrong on that and I'm missing it. But that never seemed to have been kind of, I don't know, held up as like the bastion for players to be aiming for. I was always, you win your league, you win your chance, the European Cup, later the Champions League. Whereas because of the nature of that rivalry between those two, between Messi and Ronaldo, it's almost given that a bit of a focus more to the Ballon d'Or. And maybe that's the one he's kind of eyeing to kind of to finish up. And you would imagine that the player who maybe gets his team over the line in the Champions League, if you're looking at City, if you're looking at, I don't know, Kevin De Bruyne, Riyad Mahrez, like Phil Foden, but something like Bernardo Silva, like any one of those Man City players, if they turn it on in the latter stages of the Champions League, they could easily go and get it. Mo Salah, Sadio Mane could do it for Liverpool. Obviously, Lewandowski, Thomas Muller still banging in the goal. Feels as if he's just been scoring goals for Bayern Munich for, oh my God, like, it just feels as if he's been there forever. And that consistency that Bayern have, and I think that result will, that result maybe will make people stand up and take notice a little bit. Not that they need to, it's Bayern Munich, they only won the competition a couple of years ago, so it'd be interesting. That's another little subplot now, looking at the Champions League, because you would think that the player who can go and get his team over the line of the Champions League will probably be the one who wins the Ballon d'Or. And would that be Messi? I'd be very, I don't know, he doesn't seem to have that same, I don't know, talismanic figure, even at PSG. And Mbappe kind of showed the way with PSG and would get that goal against Real Madrid in the last minute, the last time. And obviously that fixture is set up so nicely as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, the Stephen Kenny news has eaten into our association football chat, so we're going to have to leave it there. As you mentioned, David, Sporting Lisbon and Man City play this evening. No side has ever recovered from a 5-goal first leg deficit in Champions League, and I have a sneaky feeling that will still be a fact tonight after that one. And indeed, PSG Real Madrid, a proper European tie there. PSG look to defend a 1-0 lead in Madrid, and there are a couple of Europa League fixtures. Porto face Lyon and Real Betis take on Eintracht Frankfurt. But I say, unfortunately, Stephen Kenny has eaten in a time, but I mean, rightly so. It is great news to see the national team manager extend his contract. David Snaith, thank you very much for taking the call. We're going to turn our attention to rugby after the break, but
Before we do, it is competition time once again, thanks to Yoplait Ireland, the new official yogurt of the LGFA and proud sponsors of their higher education competition. To celebrate their sponsorship, they've given us an amazing €1,000 sports voucher to give away at the end of this week to one lucky club to buy lots of cool kit and equipment. Plus, you could win yourself our daily prize of a €100 sports voucher and a delicious hamper full of everyone's Yoplait favourites. So, to be in with a chance to win, all you have to do is answer the following question. Which jockey became the first woman to win the champion hurdle at Cheltenham? Text your answer, your name and the name of your club to 51552. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details. So the question again, which jockey became the first woman to win the champion hurdle at Cheltenham? Get your thinking caps on. We'll be turning our attention to rugby with Bernard Jackman in a few moments' time. Stay with us.
2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on.
Rugby.
Yes, hello once again. You're very welcome back to Game On. It is great to have your company wherever you're tuning in from as we turn our attention to rugby in the company of Bernard Jackman. Bernard, a couple of provincial stories just to get out of the way first. Former Leinster and Australian coach Michael Checa has been appointed coach of Argentina through to the 2023 World Cup in France. So perhaps we might see Felipe Conte-Pomé join him. Hasn't been confirmed yet. For Connacht, Connacht captain Jared Butler has committed his future to the province with a 2-year contract extension. The deal will see Butler remain at Connacht until the end of the 23-24 season. And news that I think you might have broke this news. Peter Dooley follows Leinster teammate Josh Murphy in confirming a move to Connacht, while it's also believed that wing Adam Byrne will join the pair in swapping blue for green next season. The West's awake as Connacht continued their raid on Leinster. But Bernard, I suppose only one place to get stuck into on our chat, and that is the small matter of England-Ireland this weekend in the Six Nations. The news yesterday, Johnny Sexton signing a contract extension with the Irish a few, and then he will retire after the World Cup. I mean, he's going to be, what, 38 years of age? And as Johnny said, it was an easy decision. I suspect it is an easy decision if we've been handed an essential contract.
Yeah, well, look, he's been very influential, and he's getting a decent run of... His form is very good. He's obviously having a few little niggles, so he sits out, but I think that's really good as well, because it'll mean by the time we go to the World Cup, Joey Harbury hopefully had a lot of time in the hot seat. You know, maybe Jack Carty will have played a bit more, and we have, you know, shared that experience going into it. But Sexton's influence is incredible on and off the field, and I think it's great that he's re-signed till the World Cup, and he can just concentrate on that now and look to go out with a bang.
Absolutely, and I suppose concentration this week will all be eyed towards Saturday, which, judging by the media comments in the week so far, is going to be a proper old school battle. And I refer to certain comments from Joe Marler, who said, whenever I try to make a gag, sometimes I get a couple of laughs out of it, but today they weren't having any of it. They were looking at me like, shut up. And I was like, right, okay, you lot are serious today. Well, I'm glad someone has told them to shut up, because Joe Marler is eager for a clean bar brawl with Ireland, as was the headline on the RT Sport website today. Is that what you expect to see, a proper old-fashioned tussle?
Yeah, it will be. I think Marler won't be starting, so he might have to wait till the end of the game to start anything. But it'll be very physical. England are trying to evolve how they want to play. They've got young halfbacks in Harry Randall and Smith, Marcus Smith, who are both electric type players. But realistically, you think if Eddie Jones looks at Ireland, you look at how France put Ireland under pressure with their physicality on the gain line, with their set piece dominance. And that's probably the best roadmap for them to take to try and beat Ireland. So he'll beef his pack, you know, Ellis Gens, Jamie George, Sinclair, Ewells, Itoje, Laws, Simmons, Curry. It's a good forward pack. And while they're missing Manitoulagi, I think, you know, they will go to that forward pack as their way into the game. Holman, Twickenham. I think they were maybe harshly criticised for their win against Wales. They were 17 or 19 nil up. And, you know, they went asleep a little bit, but you know, and they managed to win the game against Scotland. Just they took off Marcus Smith, the last 15 minutes got away from him, but they were in a good position for most of the game. So I think it's going to be a very hard game. Now, Ireland's attacking game has come on leaps and bounds, so if we can get that in motion and in flow, I think obviously we have a good chance, but the challenge is going to be to get quick ball, and that's where England have been really good this year, is at the defensive breakdown, getting jackal turnovers, slowing the ball down, and obviously they're a bigger side than Italy or Wales, where we looked really good. So I think it is going to be an interesting test.
From an Irish perspective, what will be the key factor in getting over the line? You mentioned about getting quick ball and Ireland's good attacking game plan, but what will be key specifically?
Yeah, no, I think that's it. It's our ability to not to be dominant on the gain line, to use our footwork, to not be afraid to throw the passes that have been getting us into space. Sometimes when you lose the first collision, then you become a little bit static, and the temptation is to carry again and just be direct, and it just backs up slow ball after slow ball. So I think Ireland need to be brave to go to space and really try and pull apart that English defence with footwork, as I said, with moving the ball, with decoy lines, to get us into, get our nose through contact, get on the front foot, and then go and exploit space again. And that's the key, and that's where Sexton is so good. So think about his last 20 minutes against Italy. I mean, obviously the game had become quite messy. We were struggling against 13 men. But as soon as he came on, everything got back into motion again. And he has that sixth sense of what the best option is at any given time. So I think he will be massive for us at the weekend. And Gibson Park as well. And the decision they make on the bench, instead of we go with Casey or Murray. You know, if we go with Murray, you'd have to hope that we have a lead, that he's going to come on and help us close it out. Or if you go with Casey, you're looking to play high tempo for 80 minutes.
Yeah, and I know, I suppose, the title hopes right on this as well, and we'll be interested to see what happens on Friday evening, which we'll get to in just a moment, between Wales and France. But there's a really nice paragraph in the Guardian newspaper this morning that said, "It is Ireland who, in some ways, are seeking to make the grandest statement. Win well and all roads will lead directly to the 2023 Rugby World Cup. Buckle under against an England side who have stalled lately and will not only blow any lingering title hopes, but prompt questions as to whether further research and development might yet be required." Now, is that hyperbole, or is there a lot riding on this, not only the result, but indeed the performance long-term for Ireland as well?
Yeah, I think it's more the performance. I think if we can go there and impose ourselves on the game, I think even though we were very happy with how aspects of our game are going, our line-out, our scrum, our attacking breakdown, etc., you know, if we were to go to Twickenham and not perform, I think that would put everything in doubt. So result is obviously, you know, we're chasing that. But if we got dominance in certain areas, I think that would be enough that we'd go into, obviously the championship would be blown if we lost. But you go to New Zealand then, obviously knowing that you have to work on these areas, but you have certain things that are in the bank as such.
Yeah, and I mentioned Friday there as well. As an Ireland fan and from an Ireland perspective, obviously we'll be hoping that that Wales can do Ireland a favour on Friday night. France captain Anton Dupont is fit to start, but wing Damien Penaud and lock Romain Tofinenua have tested positive for COVID-19 and will miss out. Four changes for the Welsh side. So I suppose, in short, can Wales beat France on Friday and do Ireland a favour?
Look, it doesn't look likely. I mean, Wales obviously were very poor against Ireland, got a win against Scotland, came back from the dead against England but didn't win. And there's a lot of doubt and kind of frustration in Welsh rugby at the moment with the regions and the national team and funding, etc. France went to Scotland and just buried them. And France just seemed to have so much momentum, confidence, talent at the moment that, yeah, you would have to expect them to be able to go and win. But this is still a young French team, still coming together. So it's very hard to win a Grand Slam. We've seen how rare they are. So they certainly could slip up, but on form, you'd have to say they won't.
Yeah, exactly. So many narratives looking forward to this weekend. And in a word, Italy or Scotland?
Scotland. Yeah. I know Scotland have Duane van der Meer, who suspended, a couple of injuries, but Italy have just looked miles from being competitive.
Okay, there you have it. Bernard Jackman, thank you very much for joining us live in studio. That is it for rugby. We'll be turning our attention to the LGFA and indeed Camogie in the company of Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray in a few moments' time. So do stay with us.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM. 2FM.
Hello, once again, you're very welcome back to Game On. It is great to have your company. I'm Shane Dawson and I'm in the company of Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray as we turn our attention to the LGFA and indeed the Camogie. Nadine, if we start with football, she's a lot to get through. Some really good matches last weekend. Galway big winners, the returning Tracy Leonard ensuring a 3-13 victory to 7 points over Westmead. Mayo emerges table toppers after a gritty 2-7-1-7 against your own Donegal. Cork ensured Waterford will be in a relegation playoff. They were victors by 114-14 points. So that relegation playoff has been announced that it's fixed for this Sunday in Abbottstown at 2 p.m. on the Astro. That is Westmead and Waterford. But I suppose only one place to start. I must get your thoughts on a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final. Big, big crowd down in Navan, which was great to see. Meath 1-8, Dublin 1-9. So the Dubs have Leinster bragging rights as Dublin ended with 13 players as well, but saw it out and Hannah Tyrrell holding her nerve over the free, but perhaps a bit of a suspect free?
Not for me. I think it was probably more controversial, Shane, because of the time when it happened. Like, essentially, the game was over. Marie O'Shaughnessy was very unlucky. She just fumbled the ball. Hannah swept in. And you could see Marie just put out her hand, grabbed her jersey, whipped back straight away. But it was a free. And in fairness to Hannah, fair play to her, great composure. Wasn't the only controversial decision either. Maggie Farley, the ref. I mean, we know about Maggie, top ref. But, you know, she's Simbin Nicole Owens. I saw nothing wrong with that aside from Nicole trying to break the tackle. Vicky Wall, on the other hand, had been spoken to, I think, 4 times before she was Simbin. So that was, you know.
There were some big hits.
Massive hits. Yeah. Like, massive. And, you know, Ellen Gribben's red card, absolutely. She was very unfortunate. She did swing back and it was a red card. But a goal was disallowed as well from Kate Sullivan. That, looking back, you know, it wasn't a square ball. But look, refs are human. This all happens in real time, so you'd be forgiven. But yeah, massive hits. And I mean, Dublin, from the start, they really laid out their intent. You know, like, Vicky Wall was definitely targeted with a few big hits, and fair play to her, she just bounced back up. I thought Leah Caffrey and Jess Tobin at the back were unbelievable for Dublin. They really epitomised that grit, that determination. And what I was really impressed with Dublin was the work they've obviously done in the off-season to break down that Meath defence. You know, McBohan spoke about it beforehand, that they wanted to learn from lessons, and they played with such width. It was nearly like old school football, where your two corner forwards were out at each corner and they were looking for that ball over the top. So I fully deserving of their win. They were fantastic, and yeah, bragging rights, and also maybe sowing that little bit of doubt into Meath going forward into Leinster. Wonderful for ladies football. Really.
Absolutely.
Brilliant day.
Yeah.
Brilliant day.
It was a proper battle, and be interesting to see how Meath respond. And indeed, you know, Mick Mohan, I think, mentioned that post-match as well about the character his team did show. We're flying through it. The semi-finals were announced, the venues were announced today, so it'll be Clonus next Saturday, not this week. So it's Meath versus Mayo at 3 p.m. and beforehand will be Dublin versus Donegal at 1 p.m. We'll be chatting about the semi-finals next week, so we'll be interested to see how they go. Kerry, Monaghan and Armagh, Laois are the Division 2 semi-finals. But turning to Camogie, Aoife, a lot to get through this weekend. Tip v Dublin in group 1, Tip Ramp 100% record against Dublin with one heavy loss and one big win. So it'll be interesting to see, can Dublin stop Tip's great start? Down face Offaly in the other fixture in Group 1. Both teams have struggled in the opening two rounds, so it'll be interesting to see how they respond. Galway are idle. Limerick Clare in Group 2, similar to Down and Offaly, they'll be looking for a result, and perhaps that will be their best opportunity to get one. But the big one, I suppose, from a neutral point of view, Aoife, is Cork versus Kilkenny in Group 2. So similar to Tip in Group 1, two massive wins for Cork. Everything seems to be going well down on Lee's side, but they're coming up against the Kilkenny side, who are also with a 100% record, just about. I know they just got over the line against Clare, so this one should have it all.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at the scores that Cork have put up, 7-23. However, I think when you look at it a little bit in more detail, 5-17 of that was against the Limerick team that were down, both Delay and Costello, which I think are two players Limerick just can't do without, unfortunately. So I don't know, is that painting a bit of a false picture of where Cork are at the moment? They've only conceded 10 points where Kilkenny have conceded 120. So there is a bit of a difference there defensively. I think it should be a great game. As I said last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, you can't analyse Kilkenny in the National League because they just do their own thing and it all seems to work out for them. So I think it's going to be a great game for both teams to really know where they're at. And look, for one of them, it's their last game in the league and they're going to have to wait nearly 10 weeks before Championship starts. So, you know, there's nearly more at stake here than just getting, you know, Kilkenny beating Cork or Cork beating Kilkenny and having one over the other. It's actually getting one more competitive game in. For Cork, if they lose, it'll be 6 weeks to the Munster and then 10 weeks to the Championship, and that's a long, long time to wait. For me, I suppose, where I would love to be and what love to watch really is the Limerick and Clare game, because that effectively is a knockout game with regard to who's going to be bottom of the table. I think Clare have progressed really well, but unfortunately nothing to show with regard to a place in a semi-final or a quarter-final. So for them, I think it's going to be really important if they go into the Munster Championship on a high note. The same for Limerick. If they can get the two girls back, then that should actually be a really, really good game.
Absolutely. Lots to look forward to. Unfortunately, the Stephen Kenny news has butchered our Champions League chat. It's butchered our rugby chat. And indeed, it's butchering our LGFA and our Camogie chat. But before I do let you go, Nadine and Aoife, Nadine, if I come to you first, just very briefly, there was a nice article in The Examiner by Owen Cormacan. And there was a few quotes from Micheál Nochtin. And, you know, he mentioned, I suppose, the integration with the LGFA, who have voted in Congress in Belfast there to come under the one umbrella. I know the Camogie Congress isn't until April. But in terms of the LGFA wanting to keep their own rules in terms of the sin bin, in terms of picking the ball up from the ground, the club catchment area, which is really, really key in terms of the list of townlands under existing traditional parish boundaries from which the club is entitled to draw its players, does not apply within towns and cities under the LGFA banner. So, and there was the talk of the time period. Helen O'Rourke mentioned that this could be a bit longer, whereas Micheál said this should be straightforward. So I suppose that's the big question as to how long integration will take.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll sit down and have a discussion around that. But and Micheál as well also said basically let the finances and all that go into the pot in one pot. So I think he wants to take the money and run. But no, look, seriously, his words are really welcome, really positive and really realistic as well. You know, we do want to keep our own rules no more than Camogie in the terms of hurling and Camogie. You know, we do see our game as probably quicker, faster, more open. So we'd like to retain those rules. The catchment areas, to be honest, I don't know the ins and outs of that. But what I am presuming is that possibly the catchment areas are different. So we want to keep our players with the clubs they're currently playing with. But look, overall, great words from Micheál. And you'd hope that maybe his time frame is the one that's a little bit more realistic than what Helen identified at Congress.
Absolutely. We'll be interested to see how it pans out. Aoife, when Congress does arise with Camogie in April, we'll be interested to see what comes from that. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Nadine Doherty, Aoife Murray, thank you both very, very much. As I said, we can blame Stephen Kenny, the national team manager, for getting us through the show fairly lively. But before we do go, just time to announce the winner of our Yoplait competition. A little bit earlier on, I asked which jockey became the first woman to win the champion hurdle at Cheltenham. The answer was, of course, Rachel Blackmore. And our winner is Leo Flannery from Ballymote Celtic in Sligo. Leo wins the €100 sports voucher and his club are in Friday's draw for the €1,000 sports voucher. So thank you both very much for your company, Nadine and Aoife. A big congratulations to our competition winner and a big thank you indeed for listening to what was a very fast-paced Game On.
RTE 2FM.
Game On.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.